Yeah. You got 5 days to finish all that stuff.
I know.
You can do it.
Of course.
All right.
So, last time we were talking about simple harmonic oscillators. We pretend everything is a spring. The idea with a wave is you want to think of it as there's some medium. In the simple case, we think of the medium, so to speak, is something like a, could be like the slinky, could be the string. These are kind of one-dimensional mediums. It could be a two-dimensional medium, like the surface of a pool. It could be a three-dimensional medium, the air all around us. And you want to imagine at every point in space, this medium is like a little harmonic oscillator. Something can oscillate up and down. That something, in the case of the slinky, you know, it could be the position is oscillating up and down at different points, right? If I put it on the table, I can have it oscillate from side to side. That's not the only way it could oscillate, though. You can also have it oscillate like this, where what's actually oscillating is a fluctuation in how tightly the coil is. Right? In the air, what oscillates when we hear sound? Pressure. The density of the air actually oscillates a little bit. But even in water, where the density hardly changes at all, although it does change a tiny bit, you can have pressure waves. But you want to imagine every point in your medium is just a little harmonic oscillator. However, when one harmonic oscillator moves, it makes its neighboring harmonic oscillators start to move too. And so what happens is disturbances travel. Let's see here. If we stretch this out, how far is it going to stretch out? Well, I can put on a chair. So if we're on some tape, see if I can do anything entertaining here or not. Okay. Let's see if this works. If anything breaks here, it's going to be the tape. Let's see. Broken yet. Okay. So, can we make a disturbance travel? Well, so one kind of disturbance is just a change in how tightly it's coiled. All right, there's a little bump there. That's a little flaw in my scheme. Move it over a little bit. See, just like with actual harmonic oscillator, just like a single harmonic oscillator, if there's damping, right, then that ruins our fun pretty quick. So you want to try and minimize the damping. Let's see. So I created a little disturbance here, and it, you have to look close to what propagates. It's easier to see the transverse waves.
Yeah.
All right. So the engineering majors can come up with a better way to do it. Now with a string, it's basically like a slinky except a lot tighter. As far as those sideways waves go. Now the fancy words for these things are transverse waves, are the sideways ones, and then there's the longitudinal waves where it's a change in the, you know, pressure density of your thing. All right, let's see if I can do this. Okay. String, I don't need tape.
with a string, I can tie knots and create all kinds of fire hazards temporarily.
Okay. Wouldn't have guessed you'd bring scissors.
Hopefully they'll work. Make sure they work.
Oh, okay. Yes. That's good.
So, to make it more interesting, we want to try and make it tighter. So that there's, because you don't want to get, you want to try and minimize what gravity is doing. So you want to make the tension on the string pretty strong compared to, say, gravity. Let me make it adjustable. Okay. So, anybody want to come up and pluck the string? Another volunteer? So we can pluck the string. Okay. So it's the disturbance is traveling so fast, it's almost instantaneous. Get over here. Now, what if I make it less tight? What's going to happen now? See if I can loosen this up a bit. It's a little looser now. Try it now. Now it takes a lot longer for it to propagate. Now I make it tight again. Now it's practically instantaneous. Loosen up a little bit. Loosen up more. The more I loosen it, the longer it takes things to propagate. All right. Okay, thank you. So, it turns out that there's a relationship. It's not too complicated. It tells you about the speed of how those things propagate. You can basically guess what it is if you just think about dimensions. So tension. Okay, so this is a little trick called dimensional analysis. Sometimes you can really just guess what the right answer is. You can do more work and convince yourself that it really is the right answer. So T is a force, yeah? Okay. So it's going to be what? It's going to be a mass. Kilograms, and then mass times acceleration, kilograms, meters per second squared. So this is like it's very abstract. You just think of it as mass times distance time divided by times unit squared. Okay. This is just mass over length. So, for example, it's units of kilograms divided by units of meters. Okay. Now, if you want to know the wave propagation speed, v, this would be a length divided by a time, right? Like meters divided by seconds.
And the idea is you'd want to try and somehow put these things together to make a speed. Okay, so. For some powers A and B there. Okay. And then you just have to look at what would happen to the different kinds of quantities we have in here. So if you have the kilograms and raise it to the power A for when you do the tension to the power A, and then you have the kilograms here and you raise it to the power B, in the end you should get no kilograms. Okay, so you should have kilograms to the power 0 for the speed. So that means A plus B should be 0 for the kilograms. And what about the meters? Okay, so meters to the power A, and then divided by meters to the power B is supposed to give you meters to the power 1. So A minus B should be 1. And you could also look at the seconds. Already, I think we've got enough equations here to solve for A and B, but I guess you can make a kind of a double check here, right? Seconds squared, but reciprocal of that. So if you raise this to the power A, you'll have seconds to the power negative 2A. And then there's no seconds in this one. And then the result we want to get is seconds to the power negative 1. So if you solve this system of equations, what do you get? There's three equations only two variables. It's not immediately clear that there is a solution. But there is. If there wasn't, that would be a sign that this is a bad guess, that the speed depends on some other quantities, not these.
Maybe there's a third quantity that the speed depends on.
Would it be A equals half and B equals negative half?
Yeah. Okay, so we conjecture then that the speed would be this. Positive 1/2 power of the tension, negative 1/2 power of the linear density. Now, our crude experiment with no actual measurements, just some quantitative comparisons, suggested that when the tension was higher, the speed was also higher. So that's consistent. We didn't really test that part about linear density. Although it makes intuitive sense that if something is heavier than, heavier per unit length, intuitively I would think that things would propagate more slowly. But again, you have to do some real experiments, test it out. There's a theoretical argument for this. It's an optional section in chapter 15. You don't have to read it and want to. I'm not requiring it. But it talks about the wave equation. And it goes through an explanation of why it should be that. And much other additional information. It's a very precise argument for it. This is actually true. Now you might be worried that, well, maybe there's supposed to be a constant multiple there, like a 2 or a pi or whatever. Well, it turns out if you do some more work, Or if you do a lot of experiments, you can check it. You don't need any other constants in there. It's just that. This is actually correct. This is actually true about the world. So I picked that example of dimensional analysis because it's an example where it works really well. It doesn't always work that well. And, you know, if you have a constant of pi or whatever, then it almost works. Or sometimes the constant could have some units of its own, and then you can really get in trouble. This is often a nice trick for guessing. If you have an idea of, like, I think it should be something like this. Now, let's think a little bit more about modeling this mathematically. Okay. So we have. We have some kind of linear medium, and there's something. So, we just have, like an x-axis here, okay, for our medium. And the medium goes along the x-axis. And then this axis, I'll just call it y. Y could literally be a vertical position, like disturbances on the string. Or it could be that we're talking about a tube of air or a tube of water, and so we're talking about changes in pressure. But y is just going to represent some physical quantity that gets disturbed in some way, and the disturbances propagate with speed v. We'll assume that our medium has an actual wave speed. Okay. So we could think about kind of a snapshot here. So let's imagine this is t equals 0, and we have some kind of disturbance. All right. And we want to model it. Let's try and model a simple case. Let's imagine this disturbance is just moving to the right. Okay. And we're assuming it's going to have to go at a certain speed. So we have some function here. I think the book likes to use a capital D a lot. The D for disturbance or displacement. Right? So this depends on x, but this is what it looks like at time 0. Okay. Oh. So let's think. Well, if we have some later time, what's it going to look like? T equals. Call it T equals B. Whatever. It's going to move to the right by some distance. And so, like, if we look at if we actually measure, say, where the peak of the disturbance is, we would go to the right by time, that time there, multiplied by speed. Right, that would tell us how far we moved over. Okay. So now we're over here. Our picture is like this now. So we're just a simple case where it just moves to the right and nothing else happens. Right? So, right? What happens every time. Right? You can have situations where the disturbance propagates from you know, at the same time in both ways. And the disturbance can change shape as it propagates too. Let's start with the simplest model. Okay? So now the time coordinate is B. Okay? And it's the same shape as the original disturbance. Right? So we should, the idea is, if this is, say, A, right? So this is x equals A, and over here we have x equals A, here we have x equals A plus VB, where B is that time. Okay? So you would want, when you plug in A plus VB here, right, at time B, you should get the same result as when you've just plugged in A at time zero. Okay? And similarly, if instead of the, we looked at the peak, we looked at any other point A along here, the value that we get at time zero should correspond to the value for X shifted to the right by VB at time B. So in general, if you make this something X here and you subtract off the VB, then you get the right number at time zero. And so this is just, this goes back to, this is as far back as high school or middle school, where you're talking about how do you shift the graph of a curve to the right. You subtract a positive number from the x-coordinate and replace that thing, x minus a positive number. That gets substituted for the x, right? So. You can make up. If I had, say, maybe this disturbance is something like this. Maybe it's something of the form. Something like that. This would be a curve that would actually look kind of like this. It'd be basically a bump, and it would go down to towards zero. It would never actually get all the way down to zero. It would get close to zero if you got far enough away. And then when we shift it over, get this. Now, another thing you could imagine doing is considering something sort of like this. Consider an actual, say, sine wave, right? Where there's bumps over and over and over again instead of just a single hump. Thank you.
Now, there's some questions about this thing. How tall is the wave, and then how wide is it? What is the distance between positive peaks? Okay. And so we have names for these concepts. We have amplitude, is how high does it get compared to the kind of resting state. So high on our graph, right? If we're talking about pressure disturbances, this would be a question of how much does the pressure change from the equilibrium value. And then the wavelength lambda is what is the distance, if you took a snapshot at a particular moment in time, what would be the distance between the different positive peaks of the wave? And then there's one more thing to add, which is basically a phase shift. Okay? Because you might want to ask, okay, at time zero, where am I at x equals zero? Am I at the positive peak of the wave? Is that the equilibrium value? Am I at the bottom peak of the wave? Okay, so here's an example of this. Length is an actual distance. Amplitude may or may not be an actual distance, depends on what kind of wave we're talking about. Phase shift, how do I interpret that? Okay, well, so a full cycle, if you're thinking of this, of what does an actual sine function get? It actually gets angles, right? Not distances. You don't talk about the sine of 3 meters. You talk about the sine of 3 radians or 3 degrees. Okay, so in terms of radians, we go from 0 to 2 pi. All right, and so in this example, where am I at time zero? Well, it looks like I'm a little bit to the left of a top peak. Now, a sine wave, if you actually plug in 0 radians, a sine wave would look like this, or like this, or like this at 0 radians. Because it starts as the sine function, you plug in 0, and then you go to bigger positive angles. It increases to 1, and it goes down, and it goes back up. So if there was no phase shift, we would have this, or this, or this at the origin. Okay. Now in this example, it looks like I've shifted things to the left. Right? Let me write down a formula for this thing. So, in order to make the sine function, you want to feed it angles, right? And the idea is, okay, as my distances change by an amount lambda, the angle needs to change by an amount 2 pi. So you need to have 2 pi times x over lambda. Because then if x changes by an amount lambda, the angle we feed to the sine function will change by a 2 pi radians. Now, the thing about moving to the right, though, means we have to substitute a... if you want to have the general formula, you're going to have to... for all times, not just time zero, you're going to have to put in that term, a negative vt, tacked on to the x term in order to actually be shifting it to the right at the correct speed. And how does the phase shift come in? So, in this example, this is maybe a phase shift of, I don't know, about 45 degrees positive, actually, in the sense that at time zero and at x equals zero, it looks like that's about the sine of 45 degrees there. Okay. And we could measure, this part here. If you look at these kinds of points, where that's where these are places where an unshifted sine function could start. If you measure back to one of those, right, then modulo a multiple of 2 pi, this, after you do a little conversion, that would be the physical interpretation of the phase shift. So the conversion factor to go from a distance to an angle is you divide by lambda and then multiply by 2 pi. If you want to go from an angle, like a phase shift, to a distance, you have to undo that. So you have to divide by the 2 pi, multiply by the lambda. You could see, another way to see that would be to write this, just like factor out that whole 2 pi lambda thing and kind of bring the phi inside. And to bring it inside, I would have to have a lambda 2 pi factor to cancel, so that if I distributed things, it would come back to the right thing. If you were using a cosine wave, the only difference is I would have the green dots here at the positive peaks, because that's where a cosine wave is when you plug in 0 radians. Now, there's a connection. Why do we want to think about these waves? If you think about these waves, this is how you can understand what my claim earlier, that with these mediums, we're thinking of each point as a simple harmonic oscillator. Okay? So a simple harmonic oscillator, something just oscillates in some kind of sine wave or cosine wave. So, for example, if we just pick a particular... Imagine picking a particular point. Right, so maybe you pick x equals x0. Okay, you just look at that point, and then you watch a movie where you just look at the y values of this thing. What's going to happen as the wave moves to the right, at a later time, let's have a little small positive change in time here. What would the wave look like? So imagine shifting everything a little bit to the right. Which I attempt to do. Just move, kind of imagine sliding the blue curve over. If you do it right, it should have exactly the same shape. I don't claim to be doing it right. I'm getting it roughly right. The horizontal distance should be the same everywhere if I do it right. So imagine just the horizontal distance should always be the same. So I'm shifting it over. How big is the shift?
Well, it's just V times delta T.
Okay.
And now, in our, if we're looking at our little movie here, what's happened here? As we're just looking at the motion of one point in space over time, it's going up. Okay. We have this little movie, and now you just... the 2 pi x naught over lambda and the phi, if you're just looking at one point in space, this just becomes a constant. This just becomes another phase shift. Okay. And what you're really interested in is what's going on with time. So what's going on with time? We've got 2 pi v t lambda. If you want, you can even turn this into a cosine wave. There's a rule that the cosine of 90 degrees minus an angle is just equal to the sine of that angle. So I could write this as, if you want, as a cosine wave, for whatever reason, you could write it as a cosine wave. Symmetrical relationship, right? If you wanted to go from cosine to sine, it's the same thing. So if you see something in a book and it's using cosine waves and you wish you were using sine waves, it's easy to make a switch to your preferred representation. Or if they're using sine waves and you want to use cosine waves, you can flip them back and forth. So you think of this term or this term, depending if you're looking at sine cosine, it's just a phase shift. And what's really interesting here is this actual coefficient. Why don't I put the T up there? So I'm really interested in this thing. So if we're just watching our movie of one point in space here, we see that over time it's going to oscillate with amplitude A, and this is just some phase shift that tells us where in its cycle it is at time zero, and it's a sine wave or a cosine wave, so it is behaving like a simple harmonic oscillator. What is the interpretation of the 2 pi v over lambda? What would you call that coefficient? What does it mean? First question you might want to ask is, what kind of units would it have? You have 2 pi has no units. V is a speed. Lambda is a wavelength. If I take a speed divided by a length, what kind of units do I have?
Is it angular frequency?
Yes, it's angular frequency. And the kind of units you'll have are frequency units, reciprocal of time units. The kinds of units for V, right, if you think dimensional analysis, V is length divided by time. So a length times a reciprocal of a time unit. Then you're dividing by a length. So your units, after you do the division, will just be a reciprocal of the time. And this is indeed the angular frequency. This quantity, omega, tells us, the conversion factor, it says, okay, after a certain time interval, multiply by this omega to cancel out the time units and give me a pure angle. It tells me how much of an angular change do I feed to the cosine function, right, after a change in time. Okay. And period, right, is how long does it take for a full cycle? How long, just watching the movie at one point, how long does it take for it to complete a full cycle? Say going from positive peak all the way back to positive peak. Well, usually the way I think about it intuitively is I think of omega tells me how much time it takes for us. It gives me the rate, angle per time. So a full cycle is 2 pi in angular terms, 2 pi radians, divided by however long it takes, where t is the period. And if you solve that for period, you get this formula, which I've memorized that formula, but I don't have some natural intuition for why it has to be that way, other than it has to be that way because this has to be that way, because this is telling you how fast does the angle change. And, well, cycle angle divided by cycle time. Okay. And if you plug that in to here, right, so take this 2 pi v divided by lambda and plug it into the denominator there. The 2 pi will cancel and you'll just get lambda over v. So this is your angular frequency. Sometimes people will talk about, they just call it frequency, which is just how many cycles per second. This is a standard way of thinking about it. And that's just 1 over t. And 1 over t would just be v over lambda. So there's lots of different ways of writing this. If you can take all of these different choices of how to represent the relevant quantities in here. So like some people, they won't write the 2 pi v over lambda, they'll just write an omega there, right? Because you could turn things around. Maybe you didn't know the wave speed. Maybe you only observed the frequency or the angular frequency, and you also observed the wavelength. You could solve this for v, right? You could find that v is equal to lambda over t. Okay. There's even yet another weird quantity. It's called k. Called K is its traditional symbol, and this K is the wave number. So you may also see this. And it's kind of, I think there should be a better symbol than K for it, because we use K for things like spring constant. But it's kind of the spatial analog of an angular frequency. The angular frequency is this conversion factor that turns time into angle. So if you wanted to turn a distance into an angle, instead of a 2 pi over the period, you'd use 2 pi over the lambda. And so if you're doing that, then up here you would just see a k. Right? So sometimes people like to write it so you could see something like this. In terms of these different symbols, you might see someone write K, X, minus, omega, T, plus V, right? And that would be correct. depending on whether or not you want a 2 pi in a certain place, you can get lots of different ways of describing these things. I don't like the use of number in here because it's not really a number, right? It's a reciprocal of a length. It's not a pure number. It has units. Questions or comments? Also the Greek letter omega, but the physical name, angular frequency. And what's the physical name of this thing?
Period.
All right.
In time.
Period. Yeah. And it's and yes, a is in. Right. Okay. Good. So we like these sine waves a lot. Cosine waves, basically the same thing. We like them a lot, as you can tell. We being people trying to model the universe with lots of math. There's a really cool thing known as the Fourier transform that basically says any function is actually made up of a whole bunch of sine waves at different frequencies. So let me say, let's say I have some, forget about time temporarily, just imagine I have some function, and it could do all sorts of crazy stuff. It doesn't even have to be continuous per se, although for physics we're only going to think about continuous ones. So maybe I should say not if, given. There's another function, it's called the Fourier transform of G. And it's a function of angular frequency. Not angular frequency, just wave number. Because X is spatial, right? Such that the G function is actually a weighted average of all of these guys. So, and basically, for each wave number k, this is a coefficient that tells you how much of a contribution that wave number makes. This function doesn't have to be periodic or anything like that. And okay. Now, let's see. If I can use complex numbers, I only need one function. But if I can't use complex numbers, I really need two functions. So I'll spare you the complex numbers. So we'll have two functions. I'll call them alpha and beta then. The right way to do this is a complex number. But I don't want to introduce more confusion on it. Okay? Thank you. Okay, so basically every function is a is actually made up of a kind of continuous average. You integrate over all possible wave numbers. So you can think of this as every function is really made up of a bunch of waves. Okay? Because of that, even when the actual disturbance function that you see is not a simple sine wave or cosine wave moving to the right or moving to the left, you can actually think of it as being a sum of a bunch of different sine and cosine waves at a bunch of different frequencies. This is one of the reasons we're spending some time on, not just because they're simple, but because the more complicated stuff can actually be broken up into simple parts. Now, when I say every function here, I don't literally mean every function, but basically, certainly every continuous function. And even functions that aren't continuous. The functions for which this is not true are like really crazy things that are so crazy it's worse than being very discontinuous. For all practical purposes, every function. You'd have to be thinking very abstractly to actually. Anything that could actually happen in the physical world, this is certainly going to apply to. This still, in general, complicated stuff is complicated, right? So that means that what exactly these coefficients are can be pretty complicated. So we try to model things in a relatively simple way. One simple thing I'd like to be able to understand is, what if I just have something like this? It's just going up and down. It doesn't really look like a wave is moving to the left or the right. Okay? We call these things standing waves. The cool thing is, you can actually model that as just two waves. You don't need an infinity of different waves all put together. Just two waves can actually model that situation. I guess we need to see that one. So here's the trick. If I have something like this, this is a wave moving to the right. Now to imagine the same wave, but moving to the left, and then put the two together, just algebraically add them. Okay? may or may not know how to do the trig for this. It helps to remember some angle addition formulas. So this one is sine of alpha cosine beta minus cosine alpha sine beta. This one is sine of alpha cosine beta plus cosine alpha sine beta. Okay? What happens if you add those together? These cancel. So the situation over here is you have this. So if y is equal to this, then if we're just watching the movie at a single position in space and letting time vary, then what we see is this. Skipped a term. We see this term as being constant, and then we see a cosine wave. Constant. So we just see a cosine wave and over time. So we would just see something moving up and down. And now the amplitude would be different in different places, because if you change the value of x naught, right, you got to think of this whole thing right here for just one position in space. You think of this as just a local amplitude of the standing wave. And then this is how it varies with time. So if you're just watching one part of the slinky go up and down here, near the edges, it's in this particular example, it's a small amplitude. In the middle, it's a bigger amplitude. If you wanted to make a slight variation on this, if you wanted to have the phase angle inside the time term there, then you could have done it this way. The mirror image wave that we had here, I would have had to do a mirror image of the phase shift too. Sums of different traveling sine waves. And because of this symmetry here, you can think of any sine wave as a cosine wave going in the opposite direction, or likewise any cosine wave as a sine wave going in the opposite direction. This was a little phase shift. So everything is just a bunch of sine waves with phase shifts. And what the medium holds constant is that speed, v. But the and the speed v is like in here. If I gave you the k and the omega, could you tell me a formula for the speed v? In terms of k and omega? Tricky because these are reciprocal quantities, but here's how you think of it. Distance over time, and then think of, then write it kind of funny, write it as reciprocal of time divided by reciprocal of distance, because remember this is something like a reciprocal of the distance, and this is a reciprocal of time. And so this is actually 2 pi, right, over the period. I'll just write the symbol for it. And this is 2 pi over lambda, right? If you over one cycle. So I guess maybe I should write cycle per time. Cycles per distance. And that is exactly omega over k. So that means with my slinky here moving like this, right, you could measure the distance between my hands, and that would be half a wavelength, right? Because if you imagine taking a snapshot of this, it would look like half a sine wave. So the distance between my hands is half the wavelength. Right? So you could take, then you could do the 2 pi over lambda to get the wave number. Right? And we could also use a stopwatch to measure the period. Right? So probably in this case, the easiest thing to do would just be to forget about the wave number and angular frequency, just directly measure that wavelength and period. Flip it around, it would look like that. Questions or comments about this? So the one last thing I want to talk about is energy. Okay. So remember we were saying that we model things as each point being like a simple harmonic oscillator. Okay. And with the sine wave traveling, we see that each point literally does go up and down like a simple harmonic oscillator. More general case, where you added a bunch of waves together, you would have to add a bunch of harmonic oscillators together. The bit gate is, think of it as a simple harmonic oscillator. So if you had a... Think about this. When you have just a single simple harmonic oscillator, its total energy is your 1/2 m
b squared plus 1 half k x squared when you're thinking of, you know, mass spring kind of situation. Now, we had a relationship, right? Between the angular frequency was related to the spring constant and the mass. And if you solve that for k, you get just m times omega squared. So when we think about a wave in some medium, we want to think about some little bit of mass dm here. How much energy is there? Well, it should be something like this. Now, we'd have to think about velocity, interpreting how fast it's going around. But one simple way to think about this is think about it when you're at maximum extension of the spring and you're about to turn around and bounce back. This is just 1 half k x max. And that is the analog of the amplitude in our situation. Okay, so the little bit of energy there is going to be 1 half times the little k for this little bit here times the amplitude. And let me not forget the square. Okay? And the k will be the little bit of mass there. Now this is why, I hate the problem that the k stands for wave number in one place, that it stands for spring constant in another place. So that's a spring constant k. So turn it into this. Right? Think of this formulation here. And so it's 1 half times your little bit of mass times your omega squared times your a squared. Okay. So that's how much little bit of energy you have. Okay. Now, if your wave is moving to the right or to the left, then your energy actually gets transported to the right or to the left. Okay. So let's suppose we had a little bit of a dx here, right? And you could ask about how much energy would flow through that little region there? How much energy would flow through? For a given time, right? So this is the power, right? How much energy flows through this little bit of mass, you know, per second or whatever, right? Okay. Well, this doesn't look quite right, because really the mass isn't going anywhere. The mass is, you know, oscillating, you know, in some way. It could either be like, you know, oscillating this way in like a pressure wave, or it could be oscillating that way in a transverse wave, like in a string. But the mass isn't really going to the left or to the right. So the right interpretation of that is dm over dx. Okay, so this is linear density. And then dx dt. So see, those dx's cancel. So this is your speed, and this is your linear density. And you have the omega squared and the a squared.
And you can take the omega squared and you can convert it into stuff in terms of your wavelength and right, that kind of thing if you want. There's some formulas in the book, very similar like this. The one other quantity you need to talk about then, one other concept is intensity, which is power divided by cross-sectional area. Okay? So instead of thinking of the string as infinitely thin or something, you imagine that this thing actually has a cross-sectional area, say S. So that it's not just some kind of one or two dimensional thing. Think of it as actually three dimensional, right? The actual block there that we're talking about now. Okay. Divide the linear density by the cross section area, and you actually get, instead of mass per length, you get mass per volume. Now, your book has a similar formula. It doesn't use an omega. It uses a combination of the other variables that you can imagine using, because omega is related to all those other variables. So see your book for similar versions of this formula, but the boil down the same thing. Okay. So it looks like I'm over time by 2 minutes. Sorry about that. Any other questions? All right. Let me know if you have any questions regarding the upcoming homework.
Test next Tuesday?
I hate grading, but yes, for you, I will grade the test.
Come back to you on Tuesday.
You said we have your word?
Yes, you have my word.
But you recorded.
Good point.